Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Mully and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score. Our thanks to those giving wonderful humans at WSCR AM. They're so kind to us, and certainly great to hear the Cubs winning and hear Jose Quintana, as you just did, talking about his outing and following up from Johnny Lester to Kyle Hendricks to now Q, everybody pitching well, everybody on board, and good to see a couple of guys in Hendricks and in Q getting it done. And you also heard Jason Benetti on WGN-TV. Thanks for that cut. The White Sox, boy, did we have to hear that? The White Sox losing 14-2 to the hated Cardinals yesterday on the South Side, and certainly bad news all the way around. Nothing but bad news. No such thing. The White Sox can't have nice things. They just aren't allowed them. And when they have them, they break them and they go wrong. So
yeah, that got away from them in quite a little bit of a hurry there, right? It was a little bit of a close game till it wasn't. Then all of a sudden,
bad Dylan Covey. Not good Dylan Covey.
No,
but bad.
But you're still hanging around.
But not that bad.
Yeah.
I mean, bad enough. But then the 7-run inning.
Well, that would have been the decisive.
That'll
frame.
Sink you, yeah. Bullpen. Thank you for that. Get it out of your system, because in a few years it's not allowed.
Apparently, it's a lot of system.
Apparently, the whole system is getting it out of its system. We talked about the number of injuries, and if you haven't heard, the latest is Mike Rodolfo, who has a he needs Tommy John surgery. That was an injury that's been out there for a while, and they tried to avoid it, and he gets into his throwing program, and no, got to go under the knife, and that's an 8-month minimum type of deal usually, right? They're calling it 6-8. I think it's more like 8-12. We know, and I know Zach Birdie is a pitcher, but he had his Tommy John a year ago in July and is still dealing with the recovery. We're waiting on him. And, Eloy Jimenez has a strained left abductor muscle we talked about. Louis Robert has the sprained ligament in his left thumb. He's out for weeks, 8 more weeks or something. Dane Dunning, 6-8 weeks with the elbow strain. Let's hope that doesn't turn into a surgery. Jake Berger, I don't know, Brian. Do you know anything about Jake Berger? He blew out his Achilles. Oh, that's sad. Oh, guess what? He's on the – no, he blew it out again. Same Achilles.
By taking a bad step in his backyard. I mean, it's just – you talk about freak injuries.
Yeah.
So that's the Adolfo's thing, what's your take on that? Was the experience that he got, the 300-plus at-bats and the numbers he put up, was that better? We talked in the past about compartmentalizing an injury and getting back after injury to get back at the last 3 weeks of a season, just to know to go in the offseason that it is in your rearview mirror, it's in your past, and you got some baseball under your belt, and so you feel good mentally about it. Was that better to get that experience before the surgery, or would you rather they just got to the surgery? Because now, all the narrative is, well, they knew eventually this was coming. I mean, it was a pretty good probability that he was going to get Tommy John eventually. So get the get the at-bats and feel good about it, or would you have shut him down ASAP, just done the surgery, and hopefully get him into spring training ready to go next year?
Yeah, I thought that the way to do it was to just get to it immediately. Why spread it out? And then you look at what he did. He broke out significantly. 78 games for high A Winston-Salem, 18 doubles, a triple, 11 homers, 50 RBI, and a .283, .368, .466 slash, and his .834 OPS, 10th best in that league. So he knows that he can do it. He knows that it's just a question of time before he can get back to where he was. And, you're talking about a guy who is going to be an outfielder. It's not like he's pitching, and it's not like you would rush to fix that arm if indeed you could get away with with a non-surgical solution, and that was the hope. But unfortunately, once he got into the throwing program, I understand why they waited, but it is a drag. I guess they're calling it 8 to 10 months. And
we have a couple of texters here, Molly, and Text Zone blowing up today with a lot of great texts. This from the 630. The Sox do know that only the MLB needs to tank the top team, not all the minor league teams, right? Did they not get the message?
Someone explained it to them.
Here's the program. Everyone
does. Don't get extra picks because your whole AAA team went down or your AA team went down.
Here's one. I'm a diehard Brewers fan, but also a White Sox fan. Is it not the most White Sox thing that Tyler Saladino comes up here for the Brewers is absolutely raking right now?
Oh, boy.
Yeah, and thank you for that. Thanks for having Saladino show up in the NL Central.
Well,
Appreciate it.
You know, Derek Holland is pitching for San Francisco last night and did a decent job.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a guy.
Four hits.
The old Dutch oven, you had to get rid of him, right? You just couldn't have, you were worried that loser would spread to the rest of the ball club. So you had to ship him out last year. And I think there was a relief when he was gone. And now what? Now there's more of the same, I suppose. I don't know, Brian. There's just no good news with the White Sox, and it's almost cruel. It's almost like you're just adding to insult to injury every time you see. Not only have all these injuries happen at the minor league level, but the guys that you're hoping for at the major league level aren't playing quite as well. You know what? At least Carson Fulmer learned something. No, didn't learn anything, and we found out he's doing the same stuff in AAA. Lucas Giolito, no idea. I mean, I know the last time out he was pretty good, so maybe that's turning the corner. Set your clock though. That's the 15th time we've said that's the turning point.
Yeah, so. Yeah. You said you were counting toes and everything else.
Oh yeah, I'm counting everything I can, trying to figure out how many times I got to say that he's turning it around. And then you look at the Cubs and I don't think it's breaking news, the idea that they're out of the Manny Machado sweepstakes, right? Or that they're considered whatever. They were seventh of
seven. They were seven of seven from the Baltimore Suns report that seven teams have made offers, and according to their reporting, the Cubs are seventh in terms of what their offer was compared to the other six on the table. And then since then, I really do believe two or three more teams. I mean, Bruce just threw the Cardinals in there.
Right.
And we've had the Red Sox added to the list now.
And the Yankees the day before.
Yeah.
So that's three more. So now we're up to 10.
Yeah.
If my math's correct.
And he had two home runs last night. I mean, he keeps talking about raking. He keeps doing that. So, maybe they were smart not to get rid of him a month ago, because if he continues to do what he's doing the last few weeks, last month or so, do they put him in a package with Zach Britton? Do they split those two up and try to get as much as they can, or just, you're going
to... I don't think you need to package them, do you? I think that you can get more from them separately than together, but I don't know if they've got their eye on a couple of Dodgers players and that's what they're thinking about doubling up on. I don't know, but boy, I'll tell you what, it's really something to see a team like Baltimore... just how bad they are and how good this guy is. It's unbelievable. I mean, if you'd signed him on the Sox, would it be the same situation? Abreu is pretty good, but now in a huge slump. Would it have been, if they had gone out, we talked about that rumor that they were one of the teams thinking about bringing him in. Would we be in the same situation right now that he's in Baltimore?
Well, I mean, the whole idea that he's going to come here and fall in love with all things White Sox and just forego free agency. I mean, I don't care what team he ends up with. He's not foregoing free agency, right? I mean,
No. It's not a money grab necessarily, Brian, but
maximizing your opportunity, right?
Yes.
Talk about maximizing opportunity. Wendell Carter Jr. is doing just that out in Las Vegas. And I'm glad Dustin isn't here this week, because Doris Burke, of all people, said that he has been the most impressive player that she has seen so far in the summer league out in Las Vegas.
So we're going to talk to Joe Colley in a little bit. We can run that by Joe, and we can also talk to him about the Zach LaVine contract. That's still out there. I was surprised. We talked about it a little yesterday, and the text line blew up. Everybody went crazy about it. So, Brian, if Wendell Carter Jr. can play all of a sudden this thing looks a hell of a lot better than it did before that draft pick. And if he is as good out there as Doris Burke thinks he is, then who knows? It might be that the number 7 pick in a draft is the magic spot.
Yeah, I mean, look, last night it wasn't just the blocks, and he had another beautiful one, highlight reel block on Antonius Cleveland. But the 9 for 13 will get your attention. A lot of it inside around the rim or in the lane, but very efficient night for 23 points. So he had the 6 rebounds. But, yeah, we'll talk to Joe and see what his impressions are.
Wouldn't it be great if it's true that he was just overshadowed by another teammate and he was he was such a team player that he sacrificed his game. He subjugated himself not because he wasn't a major star, but because he understood
Bagley came in and he was asked
what was
do,
best for the
right,
team.
Right.
Right. So if that's the kind of guy he is, then you know, bully for the Bulls. But again, I think there's a lot of time and a lot of things that have to happen. But I kind of like where they're at. We'll see. I mean, who knows? It's just too hard to say. And I know our buddy Dan Bernstein wrote on the Scores website that he feels that there's maybe too much credit going to Lauri Markkanen, that Lauri Markkanen's a nice player, but let's not be Lauri Markkanen-centric.
Hmm.
I got no problem being Lauri Markkanen-centric. I thought he had a great year, and I think that he gives you the kind of player that is of great value in the NBA. Big guy that can knock down shots, right? I mean, years ago, you had Brad Sellers come here, and it was a train wreck. He was kind of a stretch four ahead of his time. Brad Sellers would be good in the modern NBA, but couldn't defend me in the day. So,
but if you don't have that, you don't have that guy right now in the NBA, then you don't really have much of a chance, right?
We'll talk to Joe about that. We'll ask him that question. We'll bring in Joe Cowley next. It's Mully and Hanley. It's Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score. Mully and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score. That's Zach LaVine, and he's used to being second guest. I guess he's going to get used to getting paid. Let's get to Joe Cowley. He covers the Bulls for the Chicago Sun-Times. Hey, Joe, how are you?
Fellas, how you guys doing?
It's a magical time for us because, of course, we're watching the Bulls and we're watching the growth of so many players, both their income and, of course, Wendell Carter Jr. in the Summer League.
Yeah, he's looked better than advertised. I will say, one of the things that was talked about was his athleticism. There were some concerns about that. They're still working on some things with him, footwork and lateral footwork and quickness and things like that. So, they definitely know that he's still a work in progress. But the want and the will to attack guys that are going to the rim what's been nice is it's not just his guy. It's been, backside help. It's been smart blocks, not just, I'm just going to go get a block and leave my guy. It's been, a teammate's been beat. I'm going to go backside and help. And so it's been nice to see. But, I will caution everyone, Doug McDermott was a Summer League standout. Jerian Grant was a Summer League standout. I mean, you can list a lot of guys that are like, whoa, look at that. And then it doesn't translate come regular season. So, the Bulls have to be thrilled with what they've seen from him through the first 3 games, without question.
Yeah, and to your point, Joe, when he talked about it's want to and it's technique, and you reminded me of Tyrus Thomas, he'd go up and block a shot, and he didn't care if he swatted into the 5th or 10th row of the seats because he blocked the shot. But he wasn't getting it back to one of his teammates.
Right.
There was nothing beneficial of it other than, that it looked good on the top plays of the night.
Right, look at me. That's a look at me shot, block shot. And the thing that's, the other thing, there's kind of an old school feel to his game, with the way the two-handed rebounding. You just don't see guys doing that anymore. And he kind of just grew up doing that. And I'm anxious to see. Obviously, Summer League is what it is. I'm anxious to see what it looks like in training camp, in the inner squads and stuff like that. And obviously, what it looks like against NBA players that, are his height but are athletic and aren't afraid to challenge that. So, it's going to be interesting to see how exactly it does jump if it still jumps off the screen come NBA time, come regular season time.
Will Bobby Portis punch him?
He could. I mean, no, they're different positions.
I'm just
so I don't think. I know.
I'm
no, I don't think Bobby feels threatened. You know, and the other thing. I mean, remember Bobby's first game, I believe, I'm almost positive, was against Towns, and he completely outplayed Towns in the first summer league game he played in. So, you know, it's you got to kind of put things in perspective. But yeah, it's been nice to see, and you know, and Chandler Hutchinson's had some moments too. Obviously not like Carter's, but his passing, I didn't foresee that, and his vision, you know, another playmaker on the floor from that wing spot, which is huge in Hoiberg's offense. He hasn't been that great around the rim, and you do see the knocks on his sometimes his, you know, it depends who you talk to as far as his athleticism. Fred says he's a great athlete, a great, you know, great finisher. We haven't seen that finishing, at least in a very physical summer league where you're allowed 10 fouls and the referees let you play with kind of prison yard physicality. So, you know, we'll see exactly what he is. But his playmaking and passing has been better than advertised.
And, Joe, we've talked about it, and you wrote about it the other day, about the changes to the defensive schemes and philosophy coming with Jim Boylan and the entire staff. How is that going to manifest itself, or how has it so far from what they're trying to do with the youngest of the young out in Las Vegas?
You know, we've seen a lot more switching. And, you know, just, you know, pure just, hey, you know, pick, switch. And if you're big and you're switched on a guard, you know, hey, work on your technique. Because, you know, I mean, Carter was on an island against Trae Young, what, at least four times yesterday. So, you know, we've seen a lot more switching. And I think that's kind of what they're talking about as far as a concept that they're going to use and kind of build on, that you don't have to. You know, it was just the defense under Boylan has just been so herky-jerky. And you know, and obviously last year was his first chance where they said, okay, this is, you know, we come up with a defense. And it just changes from game to game. Okay, we're playing this team, so we're going to do this. We're going to double this guy. And obviously you are supposed to make changes for certain guys, but you still have to have a basic concept that goes on the road, especially in back-to-backs when you're not going to have a shoot around to walk through things. So, and they haven't had that. And the most successful defense they've had is when the coaches used Tom Thibodeau's defense, you know, which they did, which Jimmy made them do for the first couple of years when Fred was, you know, named that head coach spot. So, and that infuriated Boylan that the most successful defense was not his. So last year he had a chance to put a stamp on it, and it was awful. I mean, you saw the numbers. So we'll see which one. You know, Fred said it's still a work in progress. They're still kind of sifting through what they want to be defensively and figure it out. And we'll see come game time what they choose, and if there is one that kind of sticks and works for these guys and they feel good doing.
Joe, we've talked about the Zach LaVine contract and why the Bulls did it and what they were thinking and,
right,
and whether they would have done it if he wasn't here. It's done, and now comes the happy ever after. And we had talked to you before about this idea of Chris Dunn versus Zach LaVine at the end of games and who is the man. Does money rule in the NBA? If you are the highest paid player, do you become alpha male of the group?
You know what's going to rule on this team is being a 7-foot Finnish guy. It's being from Finland right now. Dunn and LaVine can look at each other all they want, but guess what? They're going to find out that this offense is being tailored and drawn up to land in that curly-haired Finnish guy's hand. And so that, to me, that's going to be the interesting thing: is will Zach be okay with that? That the offense. You know, Fred has said it, and people I've talked to have said it, that, you know, this whole summer, as soon as the season ended, the game plan started shifting towards, you know, getting that ball to who they feel is the biggest matchup problem, and they feel is the guy that most teams have to game plan against first and foremost, and that's Markkanen. So to me, that's going to be the interesting thing. Is Zach okay with that? I mean, he never got to be the guy in Minnesota. He was always kind of that third guy when you look at – you know, how their roster was, second or third guy, depending on what night it was. Is he, you know, and I think when he gets traded to the Bulls, he's thinking, all right, I'm the guy now. Well, you're not now. Now there's a second-year guy that's the guy. So I'm going to watch that more than I'm going to watch, you know, Zach and Chris Dunn at the end of games. You know, Dunn finished, I think, out of necessity last year because maybe marketing wasn't ready and Dunn felt like he was. And he did. He closed some games out. So, you know, but I'm more anxious to see how he works, how LaVine comes back and says, oh, okay, this is going to the seven-footer. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, they're all going to have their moments in that offense. When the ball's moving like that and you're playing with pace, you're all going to have your moments. But, yeah, when the game slows down and it turns more half-court, that's what I'm anxious to see, who then has that ball in his hand with 2 minutes or less.
And we'll let you go, Joe, but did the Bulls do the only thing they could do, and were you surprised at the blowback by NBA types for matching that deal?
Yeah, I mean, look, there was a certain amount of public relations put into that contract. How bad would it have looked if you traded arguably your best two-way player in years, maybe since Scottie Pippen, and you traded him, and the guy that you deem the centerpiece, he played 24 games, and then you come across as too cheap to match an offer. I mean, you talk about, yeah, I'd say, you know, $78 million, yes. I'd say probably $40 million of that was public relations. So, I mean, the rest of it is for Zach. The rest of, and the other part is for public relations. They had, if it was 85, if it was whatever it was, they were going to match it. They had to. So, you know, it kind of is what it is. They knew there was a bill coming, and it was time to pay that bill.
Hey, Joe, I keep reading that Rodney Hood still could be in play with the Bulls. I'm just trying to figure out how that's possible. If the Cavs are interested and the Kings want him, I don't know how that three-horse race turns out.
Well, I think they're sitting back and waiting to see how the market kind of sets itself, and then they'll decide if there's anybody they can go in and try to become players on. So, I mean, you're talking about – I mean, that's one thing that's been talked about in Vegas, you know, the few days I was out there, was just the unbelievable tightness of salary for guys, especially restricted free agents. And that's why I think there was so much blowback on the Zach thing, because nobody's getting offers. There's just not money out there. Everyone is paranoid about their current situation and then waiting to see what it spikes up to after next season. So, you know, everyone's kind of just handcuffed right now. And so, yeah, I definitely think they love his shooting and what he would, you know, and he's a young guy and the element he would bring to it. So that's definitely something to watch. I mean, I don't think it's just a summer league rumor. I think there's some smoke and fire to it.
Thanks, Joe. We'll see you.
All right, fellas. Take care.
Thanks, Joe.
That's Joe Cowley from the Chicago Sun-Times. And, you know, that's wild, Joe. I mean, if Sacramento's willing to pay through the nose for Zach LaVine, forcing the Bulls to match it, are they suddenly going to go cheap with
they're chasing all the Rodney Hood? They're chasing all the restricted free agents. Yeah, and Marcus Smart, too.
They're
going after him. We got to land somebody. I guess that's the approach that they're taking. But, yeah, the Bulls, they committed to Zach LaVine the night they made that deal. I don't think it really mattered how he would have performed coming off that torn ACL.
Mully and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Oh my goodness, Brian. And I listen, it's an honor to be invited to play in the Home Run Derby, to participate in the Home Run Derby.
It's awesome. Just an honor to be nominated.
Thank you. And both Kyle Schwarber and Javi Baez are planning on participating in the Home Run Derby with all the shenanigans around the All-Star game. And again, I think it's a wonderful thing. But doesn't it feel like the majority of the guys that participate see a fall in their home run rate during the second half of the season? I mean, we've seen that before. We've talked We talked to different players about it over the years. We've seen it from a variety of guys. And I don't really worry that much about Schwarber because he's just kind of a banger to begin with, right? But I'm not sure that's a great idea when you start talking about Javi Baez. Why would you want a guy to, I don't know, concentrate on trying to lift the ball out. And, you know, and I'm not going to tell you that it definitely hurts a player. I think that the if you look at it, it could be a myth that it takes a toll on guys. But
well, it took Aaron Judge. It took a toll on him.
It sure did.
It sure did. And he said, thanks, but no thanks. I mean, the numbers went
Todd
down.
Todd Frazier, it took a toll on
yeah,
1 year.
Yep. But to your point, Schwarber was talking about yesterday, and he said, and I liked his approach. He said, I'm just going to treat it like it's the last round of batting practice and, you know, just go in there and swing the bat like I normally would. I'm not going to try to put on a show. And now I hear what you're saying about Javi is everything he does. Javi, everything he does is a show, right? I mean, it's all flash, and it's he enjoys when people ooh and ah over that. So he might get caught up in the moment. And I know, you know, the Joe Mann spoke to the idea that they've changed format. So now with the timed rounds, you're not up there forever, you know, swinging and swinging and swinging until you get your outs. And that can really just wear you out. So, you know, he talked about the old format making you more tired in a very short period of time. But I'm with you. I think Kyle Schwarber probably won't be impacted much, if at all, by this because he knows that's what he does. And he doesn't have to do anything differently to get the ball to get up in the air and get out.
And here's the thing. I think we've talked a little bit about the change in hitting coach and the idea that you're trying to not have as many upper swings. You're trying to even out the swings a little bit with different guys, and you're preaching a different style of hitting, more contact. When we've seen the Cubs at their best, arguably it's been guys kind of it's has been a singles parade as you had in that one game. It as much as we say that the home run is the only way they score, they're trying to change that a little bit. I just worry that by getting a guy who is a free swinger like Javi Baez, you're almost what would you say, sort of emphasizing bad habits? Is that possible? Is that what we worry about with the home run derby?
Well, and Schwarber even said, if you watch Javi doing his batting practice, he's putting on a show anyway. So that's just for his teammates and, you know, how many people might show up early for the batting practice for the Cubs on any given day. So he said, yeah, you know, I can't wait to see him under the big spotlight on the national stage. Because he, you know, he takes it to a different level even during batting practice when it's just the guys around the cage. So yeah, that Peoria Matt said this is the worst thing could happen for Baez via the text line. So I mean, I get that concern, you know, with Javi Baez. I think Schwarber will just take a much more low key approach. His reputation is built on the long ball, on the Schwarber bombs, and everything else. He doesn't have to prove that to anybody, right? I mean, that's what has kind of made him a legend in his young career.
And having voiced my concern and having said it's a bad idea and having publicly now gone off against it, who do you think is going to win between the two of them?
I thought, is it too early for a 5-5 question today since we're, you know, a week away or so? I thought we might save that one because that was the first thing I thought. You know, would they have a wager on it too?
Oh, you would hope so, wouldn't you?
Right? I mean, you got to, right? You got to have.
Yeah, one of the two of them.
10 million take all?
I would be more likely to watch the home run derby with a 10 million Schwarber Baez bet than I would be to watch a couple of golfers who have seen better days, including Tiger, who I don't know what to make of him, and Phil.
Yeah, I'm both on the downside of their careers, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't do much.
Although
for me.
I'd like to, one of our texters said, you know, the guy shows up with, they each show up with a suitcase full of money, their own. And they just put it like at the 10th, the 18th green.
Daniel Polka could carry him for him.
Wow. He'd be the guy with the Popeye forearms. But you just put the two suitcases full of money at the 18th green, and like, you know, it's their money. It's not its sponsored TV money. It's theirs. They had to go into the Phil Mickelson football fund and bring the money out. And
that's the greatest thing about the World Series of Poker. When they lay that money on the table and you see the actual cash that guys are playing for, that's a great visual. It would be so much fun if they did that with the golf bet or with some home run derby bet. The problem is, Brian, again, you could really have a great heist movie about how you're going to get that cabbage.
Guy in a mascot outfit all of a sudden is hovering around. Just
all
kinda
of a sudden a gopher comes popping up and grabs
that's not a hot dog gun. What's he got there?
It's a bazooka. Yeah, I'd be all over it. That sounds great. We've been talking about some of the fun stuff going on in the wide world of baseball, and there's fun stuff going on with the Cubs. It is a relief to a certain extent to see Kyle Hendricks pitch the way that he pitched one night, and I know they lose the game in 11 innings, whatever it was, and Quintana, though, coming back and pitching well the next night. That is something that we've been waiting to see, and Quintana, I as you know, I got a lot of faith in this guy. I think he's a good pitcher, and I've sat and listened to a lot of people badmouth him, and we hear the whole, well, he's never pitched in an important game and all that stuff. I thought that was an important game for him, and I'm delighted that that he met his must-win statement moment.
Well, okay, the body of work so far since the trade, what grade would you give Jose Quintana in terms of his pitching for the Chicago Cubs?
More of a C+
than
a B minus.
That's exactly. I mean, I'm right there, acceptable, passable. He's not failing, but again, and we don't know. I mean, if you had to make a decision today and say who won that trade, and it's silly because you haven't even seen Eloy Jimenez or Dylan Cease at this level yet, at the major league level, and you haven't, I mean, who won that trade today, you'd say, well,
the Cubs. If you're measuring it right now, it's the Cubs.
Hmm.
Eloy is just a mystery man, an international man of mystery. We've seen a series of nagging injuries with him, and he's out now with the strained abductor muscle. I don't know how you can say, I mean, Brian.
Because you gave up those two guys for basically a four right now, right?
Okay, but maybe not. I mean, it is yet to be determined. According to Theo, they wouldn't have made the playoffs last year if that deal hadn't gone through. All right? So let's see what happens this year. If you win a World Series, are you going to care?
No. But I'm just saying, and that's not only the hope, that's the expectation that he's going to be part of your next World Series championship rotation, right?
Yes.
That's not just, you know, you didn't make that deal saying, well, we hope that he's, no, he has to be. That has to, you know, if he's not, then something went horribly wrong. And if you had to have a plan B or C, and we have texters saying, you know, EQ is a 3 ERA over the last 14 starts. Okay, great. But he just, it's a tick under 4 now for the season. And he gives you the encouraging thing is the last two starts have been 6 innings, and that's what it's supposed to look like, right? I mean, you're supposed to give your team more than a chance to win. You're supposed to turn it over to the bullpen, and hopefully your offense generated enough runs as it did just enough last night to get the win. But there has to be another level for him.
Okay, and I'm not arguing that, but I'm saying if you're judging it based on right now, how can you – I mean, the projection of Eloy, that's not a real thing. That's not a real thing. If the guy's not going to be able to stay healthy, that's not a real thing.
Well, and part of the deal was you get the controllable guy in Quintana, and that allows you to go out and get Yu Darvish.
Well, now that's not
that's
Q's
not on
fault.
Q's fault. No, he gave you the opportunity to go out and get filling the guy's name here, and it wasn't, and it's Yu Darvish.
Yeah.
But
if he's a 3 and Darvish ends up being a 2, and John Lester keeps it up, then you're going to win. And you should be delighted with the fact that you made that deal. Now, I get it. If Darvish is a bust and he's been so far, I don't think he's going to remain that. But who knows about this year? And if Q can't get himself straightened out, and then eventually you see Eloy come up and hit a bunch of home runs. And, you know, Dylan Cease, Brian, there's still a lot of discussion as to his future and where he belongs,
sure,
whether he can be a starting pitcher, as crazy as that sounds, because he's looked very good. And again, you know, he's next year's Kopech or whatever Rick Hahn said about him coming out of camp. And he's the greatest of all Sox players. He's not hurt. The most rare of all prospects. He's uninjured at this point. But he's a guy that had arm issues, which is why he fell as he did in the draft, and they overpaid him in order to bring him to the Cubs. And he's a guy that people look at, and they look at the mechanics, and they look at what he's doing. And I hear tons of people. I read a lot of stuff about him projecting into the bullpen, and maybe he'll be real good in that role. Maybe he'll be a starter and real good in that role. He's a pitcher. Maybe he won't be anything. So I just think that you have a live, viable arm that can help you in the right now versus a couple of if come, maybe, here we go. What if Eloy has these issues his whole career? What if he never really – we haven't seen him healthy with the White Sox. We've seen little nagging injuries. It's not like he's it's not Jake Berger time, but it's not as happy and fun as you thought it might be. So again, I can understand when he comes up, and I hope it's a when, and is, you know, batting the hell out of the ball, and is the, you know, what's the kid's name in Washington? Soto is, you know, if he's doing that, then I'm on board. Oh, they made a terrible deal. But at this point, you know, Q does exactly what he does, which is turn up every time out and usually give you a quality start. And he's done that the last couple times, and celebrate that. That's a good thing.
Right. But we both agree it's like a C+, right? And you hope for a B+ at some point, right?
But it's not a D.
No. I hope that's not what I'm trying to say here. I just, you know, if when you made that deal, it was earth shattering because one, you traded, you know, the Cubs and Sox came to a big deal and did it a few weeks before the trade deadline. So it surprised everyone when both sides of town and mostly north side of town saying, no, we can't really, you know, that they won't deal with us. And end up Rick Hahn and Theo got it done. So, and it was substantial. I'm more than substantial. It's headline type stuff. So, you know, it's yet to play out certainly for on either side of town. Because so I'm just saying right now, it just feels kind of a shrug of the shoulders. Like, okay, you seemed like you gave your top guy for sure in Jimenez, and you get through in Dylan Cease, and you got the young controllable guy who couldn't get wins on the south side because no one gave him run support, and he was being held back by that. And so far, it's been fine. It's been okay. It's been passable, serviceable. But it's got to be a lot better than that if you really want to see what the idea of the trade was all about.
312-644-6767. The poor White Sox. I'm sitting here saying they didn't win that deal yet. And we know that people are writing stories nationally that they lost the Red Sox deal in a big way. And guess what? Dane Dunning is out 6 to 8 weeks with an elbow strain. Who knows where that thing ends up? Meanwhile, Lucas Giolito can't pitch. And Ronaldo Lopez for Adam Eaton looks like what that deal was right now. Are the Sox going to win any of these things? Are we ever going to see any of these prospects? 312-644-6767 is the number. We've got a lot of show left for you. We're going to talk to Bigsy in the next hour. We'll take your calls next. Mully and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.